you think that using your mind in a hyper-focused flow level is difficult, but emptying your mind for an hour is even more challenging, is even more difficult. That in itself is a mental workout. So I try to do that every single day for pockets of time. So in the morning when I wake up, I try to palate cleanse my mind, transitioning from me waking up to the first thing that I do in the morning.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Cut the BS. I'm Sean, I'm your host. This will be our final episode for our pilot season. And today, we are very honored to have invited Ashley. And let me try to get this right. Like, there is a lot of titles and let me get through it one by one. So she's the founder of The Real Planner. She's the chief of staff at Soulcar. She is also a fitness instructor at Fly Project. And she's board of advisors at Lean In Malaysia, Command Tech, as well as president and CEO at Emerging Leaders Asia, right? So one of the purpose of me saying all this is that I want to hear how would she introduce herself without all these titles. Ashley, welcome to the podcast.
That is such a good introduction. And I love how you sort of threw a curveball at me as well. But I do have a response to that. So the common denominator in all of the things that I do is that I'm an educator. I love learning, but at the same time, learning in itself is not enough for me. I also like to contextualize what I've learned and create applications for it through frameworks and concepts that I create. And from there, I get to use it to teach and motivate and just educate people in all aspects of my involvements that you've just listed down.
I see. Cool. So my first question, right, is why do you do so many things?
The reason why I do so many things is because, especially when you have, you know, long periods of a time at a day, right? And you only have like, you know, two or three things in mind that you want to do, not necessarily you will be able to concentrate so much in those two or three things. But if you can think about the day that you've had that is extremely busy and you know you only have 30 minutes of time, right? Pockets of time here and there, you seem to be more productive in using the pockets of time that you have. And that's exactly what I do and how I structure my life holistically is that every single moment, rather than leaving it to chance or leaving it to the possibility of me wasting it, I tend to give myself options in how I can spend my day. But I think more than that, going back to the reason why I do so many things is because I love learning. I love piecing different types of examples together so that when I do end up educating someone, I can relate to people as much as possible.
So you focus a lot on like improving productivity. Has it ever been counterproductive committing to so many things? Like, is it hard for you to focus?
I really think that with life, viewing it as a marathon is really important. I don't believe that people would have to choose one thing over the other. Sure, we may not be able to do 10 things at a time, right? We are humans, we have limitations. But if we can break it down to focusing at one thing, right, in, say, January, and then second thing in February, and if you look at it from the annual point of view, technically, you did it all in 2021, but your focus is broken down, hyper-focus into the duration that you set for each goal. And because of that, I tend to also use a lot of different types of frameworks to conceptualize what I'm trying to achieve. And the method and the approach that I like to use the most is called reverse engineering. When we have an audacious goal, like, for example, I want to be able to run a marathon. Mm-hmm. How many hours does it take and for how long? People don't usually think about that. And especially we're coming to the year end now and we're going to have so many resolutions on the top of our head. Is 3 going to occupy our free time in year 2022? Or is 10 going to occupy our free time in year 2022? How many resolutions are you actually capable of committing to? We don't think about that enough. So the way I do it is that when I think of the resolutions or goals that I'm trying to achieve, I break it down. And I try to fit it into the free time hours that I actually have. And when you compare the amount of hours it takes to achieve the goals versus the hours you actually have, you start to realize that sometimes you're too overambitious above your own capacity. But sometimes when you look and reflect over it again, you're actually undercutting your own capabilities, which means that you have so much more room to do so many other goals. And that way, when we reflect on both sides, you could almost see the optimum point of where you should spend your energy into what types of goals. So because of that methodology, I'm rarely overwhelmed because I'm looking ahead of time. I'm being very insightful and proactive in my planning. And I wouldn't discourage audacious goals, right? But I would encourage for us to always complement our audacious goals with a broken down version so that you're being realistic at how long it actually takes. I think goals are, you know, great way to set our life purpose. And sometimes when we challenge ourselves to do things in a certain amount of time, it's good. But what if the goal is too challenging above our own capabilities? It becomes stressful and you become demotivated. So it's always good to find that balance and optimal point.
Can you give us like an example to illustrate this, right? Like, or maybe share your own goal, like what's your progress so far?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think everybody has a very different type of goals, right? Whether it's to improve your wellness, whether it's to maybe further your education academically, maybe it's to pivot your career or even to invest in a property. These types of goals are really different. So as for myself, I made a goal this year to just create habits and routines that I can stick to and find meaning and purpose behind it. In the past, I've always had habits where I do it because people like Elon Musk did it, right? I read books and TED Talks about it that says that I need to wake up at 5 a.m. I need to work out for 1 hour. I need to read a book once a month, you know? And all these rules that I put on myself and create this very stressful expectations, which sometimes is unnecessary and in fact detrimental to my own success. So I started to collect data in terms of things that I love and things that I really don't like doing. So in my wellness routines, I do have some things automated, and automation is really important. I want to get back to the automation part as well later on.
Sure.
But at the same time, I do use my day-to-day time to experiment different things to see how it affects me, because how you manage your energy levels on a day-to-day basis either puts you towards the flourishing needle or the opposite end of the spectrum where you become extremely demotivated.
So what's your progress like so far? And tell us a little bit more about that automation and how does that help you achieve? Like, how many habits do you have that you stick to right now?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, in terms of energy levels capacity as well, I used to run 4 to 5 classes of fly cycle spin classes pre-pandemic. And because of that, my energy capacity is always towards the high side. And my challenge at that point would be to be able to wind down quickly and rest productively. But in this year itself, because my habits are more catered and towards the fact that it's a more chill season, I'm spending more time with myself versus other people, I don't have, you know, a community to bounce energy back and forth, it really forces me to learn more about how I would spend my own time. So this is what I've chosen to do. In the mornings, I discovered meditation. And a lot of people, when they think of the word meditation, they get very annoyed or intimidated, right? Annoyed because they don't see the benefit of meditating. And yeah, that's being annoyed. Or they get very intimidated because it feels like such a different animal altogether. Like, what is that? So if you guys are curious about what meditation is, I often equate it to a mental workout. So I try to do a mental workout each day. And what I call meditation a mental workout, it's also because you think that, you know, using your mind in a hyper-focused flow level is difficult, but emptying your mind for an hour is even more challenging, it's even more difficult. That in itself is a mental workout. So I try to do that every single day for pockets of time. So in the morning when I wake up, I try to palate cleanse my mind, transitioning from me waking up to the first thing that I do in the morning. I often start with the meditation. And that activity itself expands the capacity of your mind. And if you are new to meditating, I would also highly encourage you to think of replacing meditation with showering and bathing, right? Because it is a form of meditation in itself. It forces you to not do anything, focus on just one thing, and your mind is blanked out. And the true story happens is that when your mind is blanked out, just as when you're showering or just as when you're meditating, thoughts flow in. And when thoughts flow in, your control and your willpower and your ability to push it out is what actually strengthens your mental stamina. So that's the key habit that I've picked up. And the next habit that I've often neglect is mobility workouts and stretches. Because I do so many fly cycle classes in the past, I always only prioritize like high energy workouts, only thinking about movements that are dynamic and fast. But in this, you know, downtime, I'm forced to be at home without the loud music and the beautiful lights, the flashing. So you almost have to increase your willpower in making sure that your mental wellness is being stabilized and that you're also creating some sort of motivation and momentum in your life. And that's how I introduce mobility workouts into my day-to-day routine. And, you know, if you're thinking what mobility workouts are, they're literally stretches and movements that you don't make on a day-to-day basis because of our sedentary lifestyle. And we sit on our butt close to 10 hours a day. I dare you to count it. You're actually sitting on your butt close to 10 hours a day. If you
I don't think more than that.
Oh yeah, for sure. So I sit close to 10 hours a day. Should I not make the conscious decision of getting up? So going back to mobility workouts, it is movements that allows your body to be more flexible. And it is a proactive approach, meaning that you might not see the benefits of it now, but in the future, it actually helps you eliminate things like physiotherapy or chiropractic or even surgery. So from the long term, as you age, your body will learn to appreciate it more and more. So mobility stretches are another new habit that I have created. And because of the downtime and being at home, I have more control and willpower over my schedule as well. So I aim to sleep 8 hours every night with the same time every time that I go to bed, which is 12 a.m. and I wake up at 8. And it's on point, up to a point that my body clock is automated. I don't even need an alarm clock to wake up anymore. It's beautiful. Wow. It's miraculous.
Cool. So what's the part that you've automated?
So the cue that I wake up with every single day is waking up. Mm-hmm. And immediately at that lowest energy level, as you wake up, you're at a habit energy level, right? The first thing I do without any doubt is I walk into my kitchen, I put my cup of warm water on my dispenser. Once it's filled up, I down it and I drink it all. That's kind of how I start my day. And to me, that allows room for breathing better as well as speaking better. It's a way that I'm telling myself, wake up. And also, I don't drink coffee, so water will have to do for me.
I see. And if I remember it right, this will be habit stacking from Atomic Habits, right?
Yes, absolutely. And cues that we set up upon one trigger over the other is extremely important. So that's kind of how I lead my day as well. Waking up would be the cue, drinking the water is the trigger, to then meditating and then reading a short book for a while, like a 5-minute chapter, short story kind of thing, or even like self-help books, and then I start my day. So each time I feel like if I wake up and I immediately start my day, my mental stamina and my mental agility is compromised. So I get tired more easily. I'm not as sharp or focused in my meetings. In fact, I feel really crappy about myself when I don't give myself that setup moment. And setting up, especially as a night owl, is really important because our energy levels, as I wake up from habit, kicking it up a notch to audience, then kicking it up a notch to engagement, and then at the very most, at the highest peak of our energy level, which I call it contemplative energy, which also most people know as flow, is really, really difficult for a night owl like me. So when you set up your morning routines and you know exactly what factors accelerate your energy levels a little bit faster so that you can, you know, get up to speed as fast as a morning lark would be, is really important.
Got it. Okay, I want to go back a little, right? Like, say, during the period that where you grew up, maybe like in high school, right? Or even in college. Are you always like this? Because I know that you have like a degree in actuarial science, you have an MBA, and so on. So how was it like for you when you were studying? And have you always been juggling in between projects?
When I was younger, I started out juggling many things. Mm-hmm. I was a high school editor. At that point, I was also taking my SPM, running for my school athlete, representing my district. I was in a music club, dancing club. I try to do it all because, again, going back to the core purpose of why I live my day-to-day life in an exciting and purposeful way is because I want to learn. Mm-hmm. And from there, I learned to juggle so many things because I have so many interests. And at that age, because the requirement and the depth of knowledge is not too deep as to what I'm facing right now at 30 years old, I was able to juggle it all, understanding that sometimes I would need to delegate, sometimes I would have to give my hyper focus, sometimes I need to just take a step back, right? So I understand myself well, managing my energy levels at the young age. Now, as I grow older, I realize that something that I pride myself of when I was younger, that I was being able to transition from one thing to another, from 1 hour to the other, always changing different things, always moving my mindset and like my body to one activity to the other, right? That was something I pride myself of. But these days, it's not quite effective. These days, I feel like I need to create that mind palate cleanser, the transition that I talked about, the putting in of wellness activities to give my mental mind a chance to reflect, a chance to understand myself better. Now, for me, that works. I didn't really need it at that point of time when I was younger because it didn't require that much of me. But as I grew older, my capacity started to shift. My responsibility started to shift. I started adding more and more things as I feel like I'm normalizing my energy levels of that activity. And that's where I start to realize that having this even 5-minute transition mindsets helps a lot. And I started to create days of the week that I focus on one object at a time. So Mondays are all about Global Shapers. Tuesdays are all about Lean in Malaysia. Wednesdays, I spend all night building, you know, new curations, attending to clients for my startup, The Real Planner. Thursdays could be, you know, spending time with friends. Friday, catching up with my family. So every single day, I have one focus, but on a weekly basis, I'm still covering all my baseline that I still am investing in it in a holistical sense. So I think it's a matter of breaking it down, right? And that's my preference, which is on a week-to-week basis. But I think some people could even dare use the month-to-month basis or quarter-to-quarter basis should they find the rotation of their activities to be longer and requiring more of their attention one thing at a time. So identifying the duration as well as the frequency of how you come back to one thing at a time is important. I know I sit on a lot of board of advisory organizations, but they don't require my attention on a day-to-day basis. They only require my attention once a month, which is why when people assume that I'm busy all the time, I'm not, because I'm able to see things holistically and block my time accordingly.
I see. And that what then would be the sacrifice you made, right? Like committing to so many projects, even like during school. it's impossible unless you're secretly signed a deal with the devil, having like 48 hours, right? What have you sacrificed having committed to so many projects?
Yeah, I think when it comes to sacrifice, it's definitely quality time spent with friends and family. You know, you can never have too much of those, right? You know, connections, relationships, support systems are a very, very vital aspect of our life. And we could always do more. But I think more than that as well is I'm also trading off skills and goals that I could also acquire. Like, for example, I don't cook at all. I never got to enjoy the process of cooking. And I've always had in mind that I wanted to write a book on productivity and the way that I have, you know, created all these frameworks, as well as mindsets and automations and decision-making matrices. All of these creative outputs that are still brewing in me, I don't really have a chance to yet put it down on pen and paper. And that, to me, is also quite a big trade-off. I think another trade-off is sometimes I don't really have the time to work out in a methodological way. I work out when I need to teach. I work out when I need to spend time with my friends. I don't really have the time to actually go through a 45-minute HIIT workout just by myself. I need to almost do a combination of two things at a time, integrating things, which sometimes I need to remind myself that once in a while, doing one thing at a time is important for your brain to learn how to focus and have better flow. So I guess that's my trade-off, just not having enough opportunities to sharpen my flow as well from the overall arcing picture.
So what's the end of this, right? Like, because there's no way that the goal is to be the most productive person on earth, right? Like, you know, doing so many things, there must be a goal at the end. Like, what's that goal for you? And what drives you to commit to it every day?
That's such a good question. And I absolutely agree with you. I don't believe in a habit that you do day in, day out that becomes such a part of life that sometimes you question the meaning and purpose and it becomes so mundane and you dread it. If you start to dread a habit, a good habit especially, if you dread it, then I would encourage for you to have the courage to let go. And to answer your question, that is the ultimate reason why I started The Real Planner. It's because I understand that productivity is not the end goal. The more we check our lists and, you know, do all these things that we think we are, you know, doing that is serving a goal or we assume it's important to us, just for the sake of being busy, being productive, checking things off, is not the way of life. Productivity is just an approach. And the more things you get to do on a day-to-day basis, it accelerates you towards your goal and purpose. But if you're randomly just checking different things off your list every single day, then my question to you is, are you then aware what are you being productive for? Because again, productivity is not the end goal. Productivity is just the approach. And I would urge you to find that goal, to find that purpose, right? That meaning of why be productive at all, right? And you know, when you find such a strong purpose, you have the willpower to keep going. You have the willpower to keep hustling. Stay up late at night, wake up really early, get up, do it over and over again. And that's where I would then caution people, great, you have the purpose and goal, check. You are productive, you got the approach, check. And that's where I introduce the third element, which is wellness, right? Because you want to keep going, but I would also urge for you to take a step back and be proactive in your resting. Take care of yourself because life is a marathon. You don't want to sprint ahead and then risk burning out and risk compromising your health. So wellness is that third element. And to me, the combination of all that three then leads to you having a quality life. And that is what The Real Planner is all about.
I see. So what's your end goal?
I would really like to be a professor. My end goal is to be a professor. Again, going back to my core reason of life is that I love teaching. I love educating. And I took my MBA, right? And I realized that, you know, some lecturers, some professors that I've encountered, they are so theoretical. They're such academicians that, you know, applications and experiences are not highlighted. So I want to be the type of professor which not only do I appreciate theory and, you know, academics and concepts and case studies and writing papers, but I do want to accompany it with experiences and applications, which is why I strive to, you know, dip my hands and get my hands dirty on the ground with different things in life, right? Startups, corporates, NGOs, NPOs, you know, whatever I can experience quickly, as soon as possible, because there's more to get to. And once I have, my dream is also to be a CEO of an MNC, a global company. And once I've achieved that in my late 30s, hopefully, in my 40s, I then want to pivot into academics and writing case studies of all these things that I've experienced. And I always believe that, you know, our generation creates a baseline, a trampoline for the next generation to then advance even further. And what joy would it bring me to then be able to, you know, impart everything that I've learned, give themselves a head start so that they can continue to, you know, find more things that they are interested in earlier so that they live a longer, more quality life.
Got it. I want to come back a little bit to what you do at SoCar, right? Like, so as a chief of staff and having such a high standard for yourself, do you then instill these standards to the team at SoCar?
Yeah, I think when it comes to standards, I think a synonymous word I would like to use is also the word expectations. Because when you set, you know, such high expectations for yourself, you tend to lack empathy when it comes to dealing and communicating with someone else, which is a very dangerous point when it comes to productivity. In your day-to-day goals, it doesn't just require one person to tangle. You need so many moving parts and components to be able to achieve your goal and purpose. If you're saying that you have a goal and purpose that doesn't require anyone else, I would then challenge that your goal and purpose is just not big enough. So what I do is I learn then how to put myself in another person's shoes, right? Understanding the expectations of a person's capability as a leader is really important. So that way, I also bring in my own core values of being able to mentor, close the gap of knowledge, share some experiences, advise, give feedback. And that way, you can then close the gap of expectations and standard. I think everyone can always, you know, meet your expectations at some point. But it's also the approach that you take at that particular point to show how much you actually care in investing your time and effort to make sure that this person is able to meet your standard. I think a lot of people go into their day-to-day job and they don't have the opportunity or luxury to have a mentor at their workplace, which is the danger in retentions of companies, right? They hire you in and they make sure that you work hard as hell for them every single day. But then when you're done working, what else do they do in investing in you, in developing your professional and personal capacity? Maybe they don't, and that's why people leave. So I think on a day-to-day basis, if you are a leader in your company, I would highly suggest for you to think about different ways in managing your stakeholders. If the person needs training, right? If the person may lack in a certain area, what can you actually do to help them discover that? Because the joy in closing the gap of expectations is there. The opportunity is there. Why not take it? If you ignore it, if you move away and walk away, and secretly you just hope that this person will get it, or secretly you hope that this person will quit, that is not productive at all for your company, for your project, you know, even for yourself. So just taking a step back, really putting yourself in another person's shoes, you know, actually caring, genuinely caring, not caring for the sake of, you know, ensuring this person stays in your company, but caring because, you know, no matter what you invest in this person, as long as you try, this person will have the capability of changing. So I think in my day-to-day dealings, I deal with 13 different departments, and I always have to shift my mindset, my communication methods, my expectation settings over and over with different levels of people in the company. I can go down to the ground, talk to the, you know, people handling our cars and talk in like, you know, the Malay language, like, eh, sudah makan ke? You know, like, you know, okay lah, jom kita try this, you know, get their feedback. Like, I adapt, right? I'm agile enough to adapt because I'm willing to learn their ways. I'm willing to use the approach that fits them rather than saying, this is Ashley, this is my approach, you like it or not, you take it or leave it, right? Which will not bring you very far in life. In fact, the way, you know, leaders now these days are more emotionally intelligent, right? And this is kind of how your chance to kind of rise up as a leader in your company, especially in the pandemic time, is to showcase emotional intelligence.
Got it. And so talking about the pandemic, right? And as chief of staff, what are the challenges do you observe that your team is facing throughout the pandemic?
This is a challenge that I might add isn't just faced by SOCAR employees. In the past 6 months in itself, I've already conducted wellness classes and workshops for numerous organizations, starting from, you know, just small startups of 10 people all the way to organizations with 50 to 100 people, right? Depending on how much realization and awareness a person needs. I think sometimes we're so good at numbing our own mind. And on a day-to-day basis, we just take the approach of numbing it and, you know, pouring ourselves into like things like Netflix and social media. We just numb our mind because we don't know how long more we have to last, how much longer our stamina is able to uphold, right? And when we start to be afraid or intimidated of what we're capable of, often we just resort to things that are repetitive and mundane. But I think if people are starting to reflect a little bit more, maybe they feel the feeling of being afraid or intimidated of what's coming up next. I would say you're taking a step in the right direction because these companies then realize that, oh my gosh, I need to do something. I'm afraid. I'm intimidated. What if my employees cannot cope? Right? Even if you're asking yourself now, what if I cannot cope? What can I be doing? So that's already a step in the right direction. And if you're numbing yourself every day, then I would just challenge you to open up and really listen to your own thoughts on what you need to be doing to get yourself ready to then hustle and thrive again. So for these companies who are now aware that, you know, mentally, their employees may not be as resilient as they think, right? Mentally, they're burning out. Their stamina is not being jumpstart. And this is where, you know, leaders come in yet again. And I consider myself a leader as I conduct these workshops as well. And simple actions matter, right? It's not about making an announcement like, okay, we're going to, you know, be more health oriented now or wellness oriented. Mental resilience is important. It's not a matter of, you know, leaders just saying statements like that, but it's also putting it into action, which some companies have started creating workshops and some which I was involved in giving proactive steps in creating the intention to make changes is what matters. So in SOCAR, I've started introducing Wellness Fridays, giving people the permission to just relax. Literally, we have no meeting Fridays. We conduct 10 a.m. to 10:45 a.m. classes on meditation, workouts, mobility stretches, even as well as book clubs, right? We have these forums open because we want to be able to tell our employees, these are tiny steps that you start off with, right? It's a way to just understand hustling has its time, but taking care of yourself, wellness also has its own time and priority. And when we introduce things like breathing techniques and visualization and journaling in these workshops, it's getting them to try it out. Try what edifies their day-to-day momentum. Find out whether it actually adds values or it actually feels like, journaling is not for me. But the point is that you're not numbing yourself. You're opening yourself up to opportunities to change and to experience new things. And I think that's what really matters in this pandemic times, because things may not bounce back immediately as though nothing has changed in the pre-pandemic, right? Post-pandemic, things will change. So if you numb yourself now until the pandemic is over and then you are going to go back to the office to work, it's too late. It's too late, right? So take this downtime to really learn more about yourself, be appreciative of it, be grateful that you have time to reflect. Because when the post-pandemic comes, we will be bombarded and stimulated by so many different invites to go out again, opportunities and options to go to the gym. When else are you going to be able to have the time to think? So now is the time. Try out things that will surprise you.
Got it. You mentioned earlier, if you dread to do a good habit, then don't do it. But say, we all know readings is good for us. And if one dreads to read, what do we do?
So, you know, when it comes to tolerance of things, people have different ways of, you know, dealing with it. And I'm just going to give you a very quick example, which everyone can relate to. It's probably like alcohol tolerance and coffee tolerance. Some people drink 3 sips and they get drunk. Some people drink 3 bottles and they're still standing, right? Mm-hmm. Same with coffee. Some people drink a sip and you have like heart palpitation, and some people drink coffee and it doesn't affect them at all and they can go to sleep. I would use the same example when it comes to reading, right? You don't read one page and say it's not for me. You don't read one chapter and say it's not for me. You don't even read one book and say it's not for me. I think you got to give it enough time to kind of collect data on your own body, whether or not it actually makes a huge difference, right? Maybe in a month you say like, I read 3 books, and I know this is a good hypothesis that I'm going to end the experiment on the last month and say, after I read 3 books in this 1 month, and I still feel like, it's just not for me, then perhaps shift to something else, right? Maybe you just need to sign up for a masterclass or watch more TED Talk, for instance, right? Just like how if a person tries to pick up tennis, if you are avid badminton player. You play tennis like 3 times and you're like, I hate it. It's not for me. Did you actually give yourself that chance to love it? Did you actually give yourself that opportunity to fully embrace it before you say it's not for you? Because a strategy always works. It's just how many minutes, days, hours, months they're going to invest in it before it works, right? But if that strategy is going to take too long, pivot. And find other ways that will work for you. Because again, each individual is extremely different.
Got it. So I want to come back to productivity, right? Have you ever experienced burnout?
Honestly, I don't think I've experienced burnout before. And I think it's also because I have a very strong sense of self. I think when I'm fast approaching burnout, I dare take a whole weekend off, or I dare just sleep in for like 16 hours straight to recuperate and come back afresh. And I think the reason why is also the way I structure my life, right? I don't really have the opportunity to burn out. I think the quickest burnout that I have gotten was I did 10 classes, spin cycle classes in a week, because on top of my own, I started replacing another person's class. And I cried during the last 10th class and I realized that I'm going to take 1 week off. I'm not going to conduct any classes at all. And I start to recuperate and I bounce back. So I think the faster you realize you're approaching burnout and you take proactive measures, the faster you bounce back. But if you wait too long and you start to feel the obligation of continuing to be in that cycle or that loop and afraid of being, pushed aside, or you're afraid to say no, or you're afraid to let a person down, you're afraid to disappoint someone, and you keep pushing forward until that very brim and you're so depleted, maybe the cycle of you then recovering takes a month or 6 months, and some people a year, right? But for me, I wouldn't really consider it a burnout, because the sense of self, again, going back to that, is really, really strong. And I'm quick to be able to say no when I have to. I'm quick to delegate and outsource and find help and ask people to, support me. I think these methods of humility also plays a place when it comes to avoiding burnout. you need to learn how to let go sometimes. And when you know you can't do it, you got to admit to yourself, not anymore. Because wellness is your priority. And when you prioritize wellness, you can hustle more, your productivity levels are able to accelerate more, and the faster you get to achieve your goals and purpose.
Got it. And then I think one of our earlier conversation, right, we talk about taking a break versus being lazy, right? And the example we use is about watching Netflix. Like, you think, especially for yourself, watching Netflix is being lazy. And when I try to argue, like, you know, people is just taking a break and so on. Like, let's talk about that, right? Like, why do you determine watching Netflix as being lazy?
Yeah. So, you know, when it comes to the word lazy, I also want to equate it to your lowest form of energy, which is your habit energy. And if you guys look into how our energy levels fluctuate from a day-to-day basis, based on our circadian rhythm, it goes up and down. So everyone has the you know, is succumbed to being lazy, right? I'm no exception, right? As much as I prioritize productivity and I have all my approach and strategy in place, everyone is at risk of being at the lowest form of energy different times of the day. It's only when you are aware that you are at the lowest form of energy and you're already becoming lazy that you need to start to automate your decisions. And when it comes to automating your decisions, I like to use this word called intention setting, right? When you know that, okay, my energy level is going to deplete already. It's coming. You're very tempted to watch Netflix, right? And sometimes you give in to it and it's okay. But you also need to learn how to get out of it fast. So coming up again with the intention setting, automating that decision to come out of it. And being lazy is a part of life, right? Just like how when we have cravings of food, when we cannot take it anymore, we want to eat and we want to go for that buffet. And when we're done with it, sometimes we regret it, right? Just like when we finish binging like 3 episodes of Netflix, we regret it. And once in a while, it's okay. You know, that hot pot, buffet, that binging on Netflix, once in a while, it's absolutely okay. But if you allow yourself to do it every single day, it becomes a very, very detrimental habit that will affect your wellness, productivity, and life goal. And that's where you start to backslide, and that's where you start to falter. So again, going back to, you know, answering your question of whether or not I am lazy and sometimes I give in, absolutely, right? But it's a matter of bouncing back, and it's a matter of having the mindset to want to bounce back. I think a lot of people, you know, remain at that habit energy level. They remain at that laziness state, or, you know, a better term that people can sometimes, you know, relate to is probably like couch potato. And it's not because you're a bad person or you don't have the capability or you're not intellectual. It's not that. But I think it's also reframing your mindset to actually having a goal and purpose in mind. And when you do have a goal and purpose in mind, sitting back, doing nothing, being lazy becomes a hindrance because you can't wait to get back to doing things to achieve your goal and purpose. So I would suggest that, you know, if you're always very tempted to binge on Netflix and not, you know, create more proactive wellness activities and routine, I would also highly suggest for you to reevaluate. And then, you know, towards the end of the year, it's the perfect time to think about what's your purpose and what's your goal as well.
Yeah. I bring this up because I like how being political correct, we try to make things sound nice, right? Like, oh, occasionally, or like, you know, everyone needs to take a break. So, and when we label that as something as okay, or at least it's not harmful, then we just do it because we have justified it, so we can just do it without guilt, right? And I like how you differentiate it with a different label, and it's a bad label, right? Like, this is actually bad, and you quickly notice it so that you can take action to overcome it.
Yeah, and you know, just to add on top of that as well, being lazy sometimes is also really important. Can you imagine a person that's just living their life on the high road and it's like go, 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 go on the time, right? At some point, you're going to want to reward themselves because that's how our brain works, which is why temptation bundling happens, right, as a strategy. So if you tend to have like you know, great day streaks and you do well all the time, you risk moral licensing as well. And when it comes back to that cycle of rotation, imagine you're doing so well for like 6 months. So then the even out of it would be, then I can give myself 6 months to slack lah, right? Or if you like go all out for 1 month and then you're like, then I'll go, you know, the opposite direction and like slack for 1 month. Our brain works in a more check and balance way. So if let's say you were like hustle for like an hour, right? And then you'll be lazy. Just watch Netflix, chill, recuperate for the hour. You bounce back again. And that baseline is often met. The fluctuation of your energy level is then more consistent and regulated. And when it is consistent, then it's much easier for you to exercise willpower and control on different pockets of your day and your life. But when you don't have that consistency, right? The key word here is consistency. If you allow yourself to kind of go in like a exponential mode, there's no telling what will happen next because you risk, you know, a landslide of bad habits and moral licensing coming your way.
Got it. So what do you think is the biggest enemy of being productive? And do you have any hack for that?
Yeah, the biggest challenge for a person to be productive, I would say, is the ability to be distracted all the time. And in our modern world, call might come in anytime, a notification might come in anytime, your emails, you know, the urge to fulfill your hunger, the bombarding of advertisements, you know, even social media. Everyone, again, risks encountering that in that habit energy levels. So to be productive is to also understand the factors that affects your productivity. And I'm going to share a big factor here, which is environment, right? When it comes to your environment, your visual is powerful. And when you are sitting at your desk and you're surrounded by like a million things on your desk, some bills here and there, two books, a pen, a journal, a tissue box, a cup of water, a candle, a plant, what makes you think that you can be absolutely focused on your goal and purpose when all of these things are trying to grab your attention? So in your workspace, eliminate as many distractions as possible. Turn off the volume of your phone if you have to, right? Dedicate a small amount of time in your day to look in your social media. So 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock is my social media notification checking time, right? Do not allow it for it to affect you any time of the day when you don't have it on silent mode, right? It's just like you're deep in flow, you're deep in your focus and like ping, and it brings you down a long rabbit hole of black hole browsing. And that's where you begin to backslide your productivity. I think a lot of us also sometimes get distracted with our thoughts, right? We focus on one thing at a time, maybe for like 10 minutes, but we may not be able to push past that 10-minute period. And it's because we haven't trained or practiced our mind enough. And I want to bring back the approach of meditation. The fact that you can meditate for longer periods of time equals the amount of time that you can actually stay focused. Because if you can empty your mind for an hour, absolutely you can stay focused for 1 hour, zero distractions. So it's a really good way of also self-evaluating, just assessing how well is your mental stamina at this point. If you guys are curious about that and you want to learn more about your own stamina, check out meditating. Your brain is a muscle. Just like if you plan to run a marathon a few months from now, there are ways for you to get there. So work on it today and do not distract yourself. Do not procrastinate.
Cool. So before we wrap up, right, tell us a little about the Real Planner and how can we engage?
The Real Planner consists of modules and workshops that I cater and curate for individuals, teams, as well as large companies who are trying to change their culture. And I think it's also because, you know, when it comes to company culture often communication or misalignment happens. So I create a platform and forum for people to openly communicate and tell one another, look, your communication style is not effective here, right? And you need to improve more on your leadership skills. I think conversations rarely happens in the corporate setting because they're afraid to be politically incorrect or it becomes harmful to the relationship. So the context setting that I provide in companies are often geared towards helping these people have that bravery and courage to speak up their mind. Open discussions are the best way for reflections and mental growth. And at the same time, there are also teams that are geared towards a particular gap, right? So leadership gaps or wellness gaps or productivity gaps. And I tend to curate modules to come in to fit in that gap. And I do a lot of consultations as well, understanding where are the gaps that I can come in and fill. I think on an individual basis, a lot of my clients are type A hustlers, which are fast approaching burnout, and they often compare themselves to their previous self. Why can't I be like my 23-year-old self when I sleep at 3 a.m., I wake up at 8 a.m., I'm ready to go and hustle, and I'm constantly an energizer bunny? Why is it that I cannot be like that anymore? And I think in our different seasons of life, different habits work for us, different frameworks work for us. And it's the ability to be agile, the ability to let go, the ability to relearn things that works for you over and over again is what makes our life optimum and of the highest quality. So I provide toolkits for, you know, individuals and teams to be able to achieve that.
Cool. Thank you so much, Ashley, for taking your time and sharing all these insights with us. And before we go, is there any last piece of advice that you want to share with our audience, especially for productivity at workspace?
Yeah, I think when it comes to productivity, I think the last part that we didn't really get to touch about is structuring our day. Mm-hmm. And the way I spend my day is breaking it down to three blocks, right? Some structure is beneficial. But if you are planning your day, you know, at 30 minutes at a time, sometimes it holds you back because you're not leaving enough room for changes and agility to that moment's needs, right? So I plan it in three blocks. So the first block is to sleep well. And to sleep well, in fact, is not just a pillar of productivity, it's the bedrock. Right? Because if you're going to give up the 8 hour of sleep to wake up and eat a good breakfast and to do a workout, let me just share with you that sleeping the 8 hour will bring you even more benefits than waking up early to eat a good breakfast and to do a good workout. It's science, it's fact. So the first 8 hour block is dedicated for that. Now the remaining 16 hours, right, is really up to how you navigate your day. I would suggest that in that 16 hours, for you to plan 2 to 3 goals that you're trying to achieve that day. Do not overdo it. Just have in mind 2 to 3 things you really have to do that day. And then in between the transitions, include routines that are more geared towards wellness. Do a 10-minute workout in between. Just mobility stretches. Stretch your neck. You could even learn to just breathe better in between sessions. And I would suggest look at your three blocks in an overview, right? Take one moment at a time and move these blocks if you have to, right? Have an overall arcing agenda of what you want to achieve. But at the same time, in each moment, you need to be extremely aware of what serves you and what doesn't serve you.
Cool. I think that's very helpful. I'm going to try it for myself. All right. Thank you again, Ashley, for taking your time and sharing all this information in being productive. Thank you for coming to the podcast, and I'll see you soon then.
Thank you, Sean.